Greetings and welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today I'm joined by Monica Campagna, an artist, an activist who lives here in Glendale, California, and who has been very instrumental in shaping this community. Monica, welcome to the Net Positive. I'm delighted to do this episode with you, and you're somebody who I've gotten to know a little bit through work and in the neighborhood works. And I just admire what you've done with your community activism. And so welcome.
Thank you, Ted. I am absolutely honored to be here today. I've been listening to your podcast and just, yes, very honored to be in such company.
Well, terrific. And I'll just sort of spill the beans. We're going to get into talking about the Glendale Environmental Coalition and how you and Dan and Kate and others really spearheaded an incredible movement. And but to try to get some context, I don't know that much about you. I'm delighted to kind of learn a little bit more about you and your background. And I gather you were born and raised in the Baltimore area.
Yeah, I was born in Pennsylvania. I'm a child of the woods. And grew up in mostly though in Baltimore City. And my background is actually as an artist. I was a dancer. I studied dance for many years at the Baltimore School for the Arts and went on to Temple University and explored from a very young age my passion for choreography, creating community through dance and movement, running improvisational dance workshops, and just creating. I love creating in many forms, costumes, as well as dance.
And it sounds very exciting. That is still going on in your life, if I understand right.
You know, it's funny, but sometime after my son was born around 2008, you know, a few years after that, I started to turn a corner into new territory. I think the work I was doing with my dance company really was skewing towards conversations about the environment, the climate crisis, about plastics pollution. And as I was nesting, I turned more into an activist slowly but surely. So now I'm not doing as much in the artistic world as I did for decades before. It was my passion in life for so long. Yeah, I loved it, but now I have a new love.
How did that play out that you got from Baltimore with all this rich dance in Philadelphia?
Well, Philadelphia is where I went to college at Temple University. I went there to study with one of my mentors, Helmut Gottschild. He's a student of Mary Wigman, a German expressionist dancer. Really an incredible artist. And so I wanted to be there to work with him. And then I ended up joining a company called Group Motion after that, after graduating. I studied anthropology as well during college. I was very fascinated by actually our own culture and looking at our own, you know, selves here in this country, actually even more than studying other cultures, which I love too. But I was really back then even looking at our consumerist ways, our loss of attachment to our bodies, to our to dance, to forms of expression. And you know, I felt and still feel that there is a loss that happened slowly over time, connection with nature being a big one of them. But yeah, I worked with Group Motion for many years in Philadelphia, and I came out here in about 1995 or so, and started my company Trip Dance Theater, which was a music and dance, contemporary dance ensemble with many musicians and dancers. And we did lots of shows around here and also in other states. The Ford Amphitheater, the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, lots of small theaters, lots of museums. And that work really was a lot about the human connection or loss of connection to nature, loss and connection and refining connection to your body. And then, like I said, transitioning a lot to our connection, not only to nature, but to the destruction of nature and to not only destruction of nature, but also destruction of ourselves by destruction of nature. So I wanted to give people a way to do something about it. So, you know, in our last show called Poisoning the Well, which ran for several weeks at a small theater in Hollywood, actually in the program, I started giving people ways to connect with their legislators or make input on bills that would actually do something about issues we were dancing about. And that felt good. That felt like a way to make a bigger connection and bigger impact.
I want to just go back all the way to Baltimore for a second. How did your parents like form this Monica Campagna?
Oh, well, they're both artistic themselves.
They are artistic.
And my father was a landscape architect and singer, beautiful tenor. He was a landscape architect, though, by profession, and he worked for the city of Baltimore as one of the urban street tree planners. And boy, back then, he always wanted me to learn about plants. I mean, he was telling me everything, and I, of course, had no interest whatsoever. I just wanted to play in the woods. Now, you know, he passed away, sadly, in 1992. I wish he was still here, because I have a huge passion for plants, for gardening, for tending. I tend a campus here now, an elementary school campus. I love native plants. So we would have had a lot to talk about. You know, he was much more familiar with the back east plants. And I have these out here now as my close to my heart. So, but yeah, both of them were 100% behind myself and my sister's pursuit of our artistic careers. There was never a question whether it was okay or not to do that for a living. So,
isn't that great? Well, you're thriving in life. And let's go to Franklin Elementary School. I'm not sure this is chronologically right, but you were able to introduce me to what you've done there. You just mentioned you've been taking care of the native planting there. And I was able to witness the incredible, I call it micro recycling, but it's this incredibly diligent recycling going on around the cafeteria. And you and other involved parents were able to get a grant and get this big tray washing machine to kind of eliminate a huge solid waste. So this was, talk a little bit about that school and how you did
that. Absolutely. And I, first off the bat, I definitely am not a one person machine over there. It's many, many people over a long period of time that transformed the campus itself, the physical campus. And then myself and another parent there, Karen Nielsen, were very instrumental in spearheading a lot of the green lunchroom, we call them, green lunchroom activities. So I'll start with the campus greening. Yes, it was in correct chronological order, because as a parent with a young child at the school, I got involved pretty early in the green team. And at that time, the green team was taking care of a small vegetable garden for the kids and then some tree plantings that they had been successful in getting done. That was in about 2014 or so. And then during that time, and even before I got to the school, three moms, and it seems, I'm sorry, Ted, but it's often the moms, for whatever reason, got together and wrote a $1 million urban greening grant using Prop 84 funds, which were from the state of California specifically to mitigate stormwater loss. This project took 5 years to get the funding for and to implement, but it happened, and the city of Glendale participated as well as, of course, Glendale Unified School District, who were extremely helpful and supportive during the process. And out of that came a complete transformation of the school campus to all native California native plants and trees, bioswales, stormwater capture systems. And I became the lead caretaker back then in about the fall of 2016. And I still am today. And now I actually am paid through the foundation for my efforts after volunteering for about 7 years. That's say the campus is at least 2 acres. I don't know the official number, but it's large, and I do have some help, thankfully, and I love it. It's an amazing oasis for monarch butterflies. Now we have a huge amount of milkweed there, which probably the most in this urban environment of Glendale that exists. Oak trees, desert willows, sages, all types of native plant. And we have the birds and the butterflies and the bees that come with that. So it's a pleasure to be there, and the kids love it. The staff, of course, loves being there too. So that happened, and part of my, spillover into the next phase was, okay, how about we start a worm bin program? And I worked with the city of Glendale, get some worm bins donated, and we set up 10 classes with worm bins. I had a lot of fun teaching the kids how to do vermicomposting, along with some support from our local worm farmer here in Glendale, as well as some city staff that came in and talked to the kids. And we, and there's this process of really try to teach the idea of recycling our waste and using it and making use of it, and it being a circular kind of thing. And then regenerative landscaping and using it to build our soil there on the campus, which we really need to do. It's constant mulching, Ted. Mulch, mulch, and more mulch. So worm bins got set up, and then I was like, oh, we need a water bottle filler. So we got the foundation to cover the cost of that, and then the district put it in for us. And now that is something common in a lot of our Glendale schools now, and hopefully they're going to just continue to add more. And then we expanded to other things. We did a waste audit, and we found out that, we have a lot of food waste. We had a lot of plastics going in with the food waste. Our Karen and I and the other people on the newly formed PTA Green Lunchroom Committee then spearheaded all these other efforts. We started with a share table where kids can donate food that they can't eat, don't open, from the cafeteria that other kids can share. We moved into a sorting program, the first in the district. Probably very few schools in our county have such a thing, but we wanted to prepare for a new law that's coming up in California in January, SB 1383, which will require all businesses, including schools and including municipal districts, to keep organic waste and edible foods out of the landfill, which of course is to prevent the methane emissions that come with that. And that was probably our biggest program, because it took a lot of time to figure it out with the district. Our principal was utterly supportive, and probably this never would have happened without her, Principal Cully over at Glendale, who calls our cafeteria Shea Cully. And she's there helping the kids sort. We sort out our liquids from the trash. We put our trash in the trash. There is recycling put in there, but we have a hauler that separates that if there is anything that's actually usable for recycling. And then the most important thing is we have all the kids put just food waste in the food waste bin, and that gets taken off-site for off-site composting. And then our final green initiative in the lunchroom was the successful acquisition of a dishwasher from Hobart, which we have to thank one of our PTA leads for making that happen, Michael Bridges. And the deal was, they donated this, I think it's a $20,000 dishwasher, in return for being able to study the cost savings over a year at the school. And what they found was that in a year, we saved about $6,000. So, you can kind of then figure out how long the payoff is going to be if you install one of these dishwashers. So it was really helpful for them to be able to show that and to itemize what those savings were. So now we have reusable forks and other utensils and reusable trays, which are compartmentalized for the food. All that's happening, we had to, of course, stop during COVID, but I just trained the kids again a couple weeks or last week and a half ago now or so, and things are starting to get up and running again.
We had such a great time coming down and visiting the campus at lunch hour.
I find that the children are better at learning this stuff and understanding it than the grown-ups. If I'm honest, you know, it's easy for them to start a new habit.
Let's talk about the Grayson Project, because this was this is just monumental that here was this utility, municipal utility serving a couple hundred thousand people, had sort of an old sprawling power plant with 7 or 8 or 9 units of all sort of stages of disrepair. And they came forward and decided to tear most of it down and build a, 262-megawatt power plant that was going to be used not only by the city of Glendale, but likely for the other communities. And you and Dan and Kate, and you're going to list other people, said, why on earth are we building a natural gas power plant that's going to need to be amortized over 30, 40 years if we're trying to decarbonize as rapidly as possible? So what was the genesis? What was the spark? When did you guys come together?
Well, it was a tiny, tiny bit before my time, but I can speak about it. I came in within 6 months of this. So the genesis of this project was really around June 2015, when that 262 megawatt proposal was put forward. And then in about 2007, I'd say Dan Brotman, our current city council member, then founder of Glendale Environmental Coalition, wrote the first op-ed in the Glendale News Press about the project. And after that, he launched a Facebook group that maybe had about 30 people in it. This is around August of 2017 now. The big spark was when Dan and others, including Burke Culver, Kate Unger, Jane Lawton Moore, and there were many others, they formed a coalition with Sierra Club. And Sierra Club really helped the group to broadcast the message further to the community. And actually, they were able to get, when the Grayson Environmental Impact Report came forward, over 1,000 comments. So that was a monumental effort. And I came in at that time. I came in to speak in front of the Glendale Water and Power Commission back then at the Grayson plant. And that was, you know, in 2017 in the fall. And we just kept growing bigger and bigger. There were a lot of different stages along the way, having people come speak at council. There was a lot of education that we did. You know, I think from the very beginning, the idea wasn't to just say no. It was to say, no, why don't you try this? And we were very aware of the climate crisis, all of us, and that's and air quality issues around that area, that neighborhood. So the impetus to build back better was there from the start. And we didn't feel there was any imagination happening at the time about what that build back could look like. We knew that financially it would be a bad investment because everything's changing now. We have laws that are going to prevent the use of fossil fuels after 2045 at the minimum. And we knew that these technologies were coming down in price for distributed energy. We knew that the technologies were rapidly evolving. And we just, all of us kept asking for better solutions. We wrote letters. We spoke at council. We did op-eds. We did rallies. We had 3 big rallies in the beginning of 2018, which of course took a lot of organizing to get people up to speed on the issues, figure out who was going to talk about what, and get people there. And we had up to 500 or even more people at one of those rallies. They were all in the hundreds. These were the biggest rallies that Glendale City Council had ever seen. So it was clear the community wasn't satisfied with the rest of the menu.
Well, that really led to the council. Basically, I'm fast forwarding. I know there was a lot of hard work in the trenches, like you're telling, but that led to the council basically pulling the plug.
and right. ultimately saying, okay, utility, let's not do that. Let's see what else we can get. And they ultimately issued that clean energy RFP, which was set out, and just anybody that can deliver solar or fuel cells or microturbines or energy efficiency or whatever
right.
put it on the table for utility consideration. Is that
That's true? Correct. And that was something we asked for over and over again. They did that in, I think, May of 2018. And our inspiration for asking for that came from a coalition in the Oxnard area. They had formed around a potential new gas plant there. And we were very inspired by what they did. They wanted to connect businesses with opportunities that would serve the utility's need. So matching clean energy developers with the utility, they had these big forums where they brought people together. And that out of that process came many projects. And now they have a huge battery there and no gas plant. So, you know, we saw how they did it. And we actually wanted to, as I said before, we're always about helping and giving ideas and understanding that this is all new for the city. And we've always wanted to be a part of the solution. At the time, they weren't interested in having us help organize a meet and greet like that. But they did go forward with the request for clean energy proposals. And out of that came, I think, five projects, four of which they moved on, if I'm right, or three or four. So yes, that was great. And that outcome came a year later, and that was 2 years ago now. And when that came back to council, we still understood that they were going to propose more gas, new gas, possibly the last gas purchased in the state. And we asked council to please put a pause on this and have them keep looking for more resources in this next couple of years and come back with another proposal with hopefully a lot less gas in it. And here we are now. So that happened. Unfortunately, there is not less gas. It's the same amount. And our group is definitely advocating for more research and more another round of RFPs. We're particularly interested to see what can happen in the commercial sector. We're very excited to hear that there's new transmission coming into Glendale on the IPP, which we're hoping can change the some of the reasons that we're behind wanting to install more new gas turbines. We know we need more capacity here in the city to fill those batteries. So it's all about solar now. It's all about solar, getting solar on parking lots, rooftops, et cetera. But, and there are a lot of projects along the way. We were incredibly excited about the potential virtual power plant that will happen here, which could be the largest in the nation. And GEC early on was out there collecting signatures and in contact information from people for this potential power, for this potential virtual power plant years ago. We have about 350 people who joined that list, and we're still collecting names. We did a huge mapping project to show where there might be potential large commercial rooftops and parking areas that could be utilized. We did an essential services study, which showed different things in the city that you would want to have battery storage and solar installed in case of emergencies that would need backup. We've done a lot of things like that that we're hoping can contribute to the solutions here in Glendale.
Yeah, I think you deserve a ton of credit, and the results are dramatic. There's no 262 megawatts on the table anymore.
That is true. That is true.
Megawatts, we've sort of gone from, 160 up to 262. Now we're down to 90.
93 or so, yeah.
And a 50 megawatt battery and some, a pretty dramatic change. I'm hearing in your voice that you wish we were moving still faster, which...
Yes, yeah, I don't know that there's an urgency that we've needed the last few years to look for more. And that is definitely something we are going to be expressing our views on, because we do think there's more out there. There's nothing's really happened in the commercial sector yet. We know we're waiting for a cost of services analysis to figure out a good fit rate. But for example, if we had a great feed-in tariff program that matched Los Angeles's, you know, we would be able to probably get rid of one of those engines. You know, it's just like looking at solutions to replace this fossil fuel use that we're quite concerned if we build it, other cities in their area will want to use it. And we're very concerned about limits being placed on the use because of that. We don't want to become the gas power provider for this region.
So, and then Dan Brotman, who founded the Environmental Coalition, ran for council and won. And we've got a council that is certainly got the opportunity to lean green on key issues. And then Dan, of course, has appointed commissioners. I'm one of his commissioners, as you know well.
Very happy about that, yes. GEC has many tentacles. And having council member Dan Brotman in where he is now, every time something comes up where a change is possible, say there's a new project, a new resurfacing street project, a new building project, a new way to approach an ordinance, he's thinking sustainability. He's thinking about how can we build back better. And we think that way too. And the more you learn, of course, the more ideas you have spinning around. Oh, we can turn this parking lot into a cooler space by XYZ, you know. And that is what he's bringing into the culture of the city now. This way of thinking about every decision from that point of view. What's the most sustainable way we can do this? And of course, it's going to take time, but there are other council members are also doing this as well. So it is really becoming kind of like who can outdo the other at this point. And I can't speak for everyone, but I think we are quite happy with all the progress that's been made on many fronts of late. Having Dan in there, you know, he's able to introduce ideas that our Glendale Environmental Steering Group has set as priorities, that he also has set as priorities. And those cover many areas. Clean energy is one. And electrification is another, electrifying all our landscaping equipment, our new building code being possibly having a REACH code to encourage electrification of new building, electrifying our city vehicle fleet, which is something that the city is pursuing. And back to the landscaping equipment, I mean, a huge, really bravo to the city. They've committed to electrifying all of their parks and public spaces. I mean, this is huge. They've put the money there for converting all of their gas-powered small engine landscaping equipment to electric. And this is an area that is just profoundly impacted by ozone. So not only is it better for the climate, it's better for local air quality and of course the workers. So we're so happy about that. There's a lot of initiatives that we support for cooling the city. Cooling schools is something I really care about, but cooling the city in general with cool pavements, which they just started a pilot project for, cool roofs, trees and more trees, lots of tree projects, greening campuses at schools, and finding new green spaces in highly impacted areas like South Glendale, I know is a priority, not only to Dan, but to the other council members who have really started to get a little more serious about looking for places they can expand green space. And many other things, making the city more bikeable, more pedestrian friendly, supporting the Verdugo Wash Project, and lots with plastics. There's a lot of good things that have happened on that side too. So we are supporting, and we make comment letters. You know, we write comments, we call in support, we rally the community to call in support when things are coming up at council. We're very interconnected with policy. I think that's probably the biggest focus we have is getting sound, environmentally sensitive, sustainable policy.
It really speaks to the whole fabric of sustainability that it just involves so many resources, so many different people, programs, policies, initiatives, financing. It's but kudos to you and certainly to Dan and the other leaders of the coalition, but all the people that have come together, because this organization has, I think the case study will be written years from now, that this organization came in and really had a dramatic effect. I want to ask you just a couple more questions and then let you go. But one is, I think you're a graphic artist. If not, you're a web designer. So that creativity from the dance and your activism somehow in the middle there was this graphic artist.
That's right. I told you how you're very perceptive. Yes, I supported myself a bit with web design and graphic design all through the years, working with a lot of other artists. And now I get to work on our GEC.ECO website. And that's great because it's become a place to provide resources that connect with the community here, like locally focused sustainability information on what's coming at the council, but also what projects are going on and how residents can participate in things like composting and electrifying their homes, et cetera. So yeah, it's fun to bring all those skills together. I had to learn how to do web design specifically because I had every hat on when I was running my nonprofit organization, the dance company, grant writing, publicity, and web design, graphic design. You know, I like doing it all. It makes life interesting that way.
It's a critical function, right? To rally the troops.
To be able to project the things that you're doing and your information and project it out so it doesn't stay in this little bubble.
Right. Take that energy and leverage it and broadcast it. And not just energy, it's enthusiasm, it's logic, everything you're saying.
Yeah, and it brings a lot of people to me, specifically about the school greening. I'm able to meet people and then make connections for bigger projects, like with Northeast Trees and recently the Land for Public Trust. You know, we just had a meeting. It's like you just kind of bringing the people who write the grants and do the projects and can offer something to the people that need it, that feels amazing. I love doing that.
Last question is about balance and how you maintain balance. But I looked on your Facebook page, and I think maybe this explains it. Right at the top, it says you love nature, family, friends, whales, dance, gardening, music, sushi, and chocolate. So
about right. And Baz, hot Baz.
You're doing great. So just Harry, so great.
Thank you. And thank you for inspiring me too. You really do. All your schoolwork and everything, it's definitely inspired me. So
very good. Thanks again for being part of the Net Positive and have a great day. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Ted. You too.
That's it. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Net Positive. We'll see you next time.